By what right does the wolf judge the lion?
Welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Currently regularly hosted by myself, Brett, and Daryl Lloyd. Thanks go out to George R. R. Martin for the world we're all fans of, FFG for this amazing game, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons license music that you hear in this episode. This is Season 4.
Guys, like my
what indeed
imperious voice. I'm thinking
I
about
was a little scared.
Yeah, I'm thinking about trying out to be Namor, the Submariner, in the next Marvel film. Imperious Rex.
Hey, anything is possible. Hey. Daryl can get a press badge to PAX. You can get a movie role.
That's right. It happened though. Don't you forget it.
And, yeah, they're saying, don't you forget it, Daryl.
Which now I might have to go to PAX alone, quote unquote.
Oh, that sucks.
Because the guy I was going with, his job, well, which is actually my job, we work together, he has to show up for, we have like physical inventory at work, and so now they're telling him, even though he requested off like 8 months ago, but then he got promoted, and the job that he got promoted to requires him to be there, that they're not going to let him go. It only falls within 1 day of it. It's just all for 1 day. It sucks.
Wow.
Being an adult, homie, it does suck. It does. I'm still going
to
go. It's PAX, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they have, like, a board game and, like, card game part of it, a part of the con, like, half of it is. You know, board games and card games, but I don't think FFG is doing anything over there at PAX.
You know, I could have sworn that they had in the past, a year or two ago. But yeah, I don't think I heard anything about it this year.
Bummer and shit.
So yeah, go figure. Well, I guess this is indeed another episode of Two Champs and a Chump, your favorite weekly Game of Thrones podcast.
That's right.
At least, you know, mine. Most weeks.
And in most weeks.
Sometimes.
I guess my hopes for getting a press badge are dashed because we are certainly not within 30 seconds.
No. You know, I mean, I can tweak that. Come editing time, we'll see. It may wind up playing a little different to the listeners. I've been trying to tweak things a little more than I had for a little while there. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But regardless, I'm your always present host, Will/Kennan, and with me this week are the other two musketeers, Athos and Porthos.
Wow.
You guys
always wanted to be Porthos.
Yeah.
I was hoping for D'Artagnan, but whatever.
You would.
Which is weird. I don't know why they call it the three musketeers if there's a fourth one. That shit doesn't even make sense.
There's actually way more musketeers than that.
No.
He's like observing the three musketeers. That's the point.
Hey, don't question me.
Until the end. Have you ever seen a play or
theater? You shut the hell up. I have seen The Man in the Iron Mask like 10 times. That's
nice.
Leo's best movie.
And that is definitely related to what we're talking about.
Dude, that movie is
not
the
even
shit.
Close.
You know what?
They're supposed to read books.
The Game of Thrones
How
card
read
game.
That book?
And I'm going to play the Man in the Iron Mask card game.
That's a card game?
It is now. Anyways, gentlemen, We have a show to do.
We do have a show. We have a show.
I just thought you guys wanted to talk to me.
That too. Now, we've got an exciting show this time around, methinks, because we've got another teaser article over on the FFG main page. And I think that's pretty spiffy. There's starting to be some wild-looking stuff. Okay, maybe there's already been some wild-looking stuff in this set. But the trend continues. So let's see. Looks like this one is Ancestral Home, the fourth chapter pack in the Conquest and Defiance cycle. We've got some pretty sweet art there on the front of that card. Any ideas what that is? Which castle that might be?
Harrenhal?
It looks kind of dreary, like it might be Harrenhal.
It looks like Harrenhal to me. And wait, did they not spoil a new Harrenhal? Yeah, they did. Didn't they?
I don't know.
I could have sworn they
that
did.
Has to, that, my thought is Harrenhal. Or whatever that crappy place is that blah, 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 Littlefinger goes to. But it looks too big for that.
Oh, the Eerie?
No, the like his actual like keep.
Oh, his
all cruddy and
yeah. I think they said it is just like a single tower by itself out on a
yeah. Like, rocky I remember the vibe being it was rather dainty. So I think Harrenhal is the logical. Like, rather than trying to pump things I've seen in the show lately, it seems that's the only worn down castle we've got.
Well, I mean, it does look kind of worn down. I could see it being Moat Cailin. That was almost my first thought, but I'm not sure it actually looks ruined enough to be Moat Cailin.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I mean, I've never seen a castle melted down by dragonfire, so I can't really judge it on what's time-worn versus dragon-worn.
Yeah, yeah. So hard to decipher that. But, you know...
Regardless, a shitty castle.
Yeah. I think the cards themselves are probably way more exciting for folks, though. There. You guys want to jump on the cards we've got?
You bet.
All right. Here, there you go, Kyle. Pick something out that we can see there.
Well, the one that I'm excited about, and it's funny because it's the one you can see the least of, would be that Dorne Loyalist hiding there in the background.
Ooh, I've got a suspicion of why you might be excited about that.
For those of you not from the CCG days, there was a Martell dude. I think those were actually his stats. I think he was 3 cost, 3 strength.
It was 3 for 4, if I remember right, three actually. For 4. Yeah.
It was called the Prince's Loyalist. And he was a nightmare and a half to deal with. Just a huge cancel engine all by himself. I won't go into details into what he did.
He canceled character abilities.
With influence. Neil influence to cancel character abilities. And it was a pain in the butt to deal with. And, I mean, just seeing the word loyalist, I have no idea if this card is going to have anything to do with that. But just that word sends shivers down my spines of negative play experiences of bygone years.
Yeah, I mean, that's been all over lately. I'm not really sure why people just see the word loyalist and immediately jump to the prince's loyalist. You know, there's only so many words to go around. They might just reproduce things from time to time. But I suppose it is in this cycle with Prized, and the Prince's Loyalist was in the old cycle with Doomed, and Doomed with Prized are, you know, frequently compared as kind of balancing mechanics for overpowered cards. So,
and a lot of this cycle, what we've been spoiled, seems very akin, kind of like a nod back to some CCG cards and concepts, and I think this whole cycle kind of has this looking back to look to go forward kind of feel to it on kind of Thrones' roots. And so, I mean, like you said, there are other loyalists in the game. this may have nothing to do with him, but just seeing Martel, that son, and that stupid word, I look forward to seeing what that actually does.
And I hope it has nothing to do with Prince's loyalist.
Yeah, and absolutely nothing.
All right. Well, what else can we see there? We can see a tiny little bit of the Lysini captain, which we can see gold at 3, strength at 3, and military with a naval icon and a power icon, which really tells us next to nothing other than Baratheon continues to get naval icons.
I'm going to assume he's a captain, trait-wise.
You know, you would think, but I've played Game of Thrones long enough to know, he's probably going to be a smuggler and an ally. No captain allowed.
You know, I really want to disagree with you, and I just can't.
You know the truth.
I would not. I know, it probably is going to be freaking smuggler ally. But, you know, like you said, more naval for Barra. I hate it when they kind of, when effects don't carry over cycle to cycle. So seeing some love for the naval stuff is always good.
Yeah.
Then I guess we'll just keep working our way down here. We got Tyrion. Yeah, so all we've got are the pretty standard 4 cost and 3 strength and a learned crest. So not much to glean out of that. But,
hey, learn a crest out of Lannister are always good.
Yep. What's that blue one we got there, Daryl?
Looks like, I don't even know how to say it, Great Wick? Wick? Looks pretty interesting. It's any phase, Neil, I imagine Great Wick, to choose another location, stand that location. If that is indeed what it does, I don't see any prized keyword for it or anything. That is awesome. If that's
yeah,
what
that's
it does.
Good.
And it, you know, Greyjoy, I feel like should be known for its awesome locations. You know, they're kind of a, you know, they have the warships and stuff, but the only really prevalent one has been Longship Iron Victory. You know, some of the other houses always have their kind of low cost kind of go to. Targaryen has Meraxes, the Lanny Iron Throne or Pentoshi Manor. I guess Martell doesn't really have a great one. Lost Oasis I've always really liked.
Agreed.
But you know, this one is that is super nice. So this is like finally one of those locations that you can splash into other houses, you know, because that's what I would do with Meraxes, most definitely, and Lanny Iron Throne, you know, a couple of those locations. Heck, you even see Pyre of the False Gods running around with Barriss, so it's nice that they get a location that can see play in a variety of archetypes.
Yeah, or, of course, Greyjoy's got the location reducer, so they may just splash the out-of-house locations. Greyjoy deck.
Yeah.
You know,
if
they can use Refurbished Hulk to splash the Lanny Iron Throne or Aegon's Hill, and suddenly Great Wick is giving them 2 uses of stuff like that per turn, that looks like it could be a pretty big boost.
The hill was what I first went to. Maybe being able to kill 2 characters in their hand is going to be brutal.
Yeah, not even just that, what about even just getting double use out of a reducer? Like, just, like, little menial things like that could
be
really good.
If you really need it. Or Greyjoy, let's see, Greyjoy did get their 2-cost reducer, right? The 2 for 2?
The Bloody Keep?
Yes. There we go. You know, it's kind of so-so. You know, sometimes I'll throw a copy or two into a deck depending on what it does. But if I've got Great Wick available, and I've got the possibility that I might be using that twice in one turn, and, I mean, that's pretty big income chunk right there.
Yeah. This is really good.
It's solid. It's, like you said, it's super versatile. I mean, we just off the cuff have thought of several creative uses, and I'm sure there's a million more. Like you said, they're not afraid to run out of house stuff, so you can see all kinds of crazy combos there. I think this is a good, powerful, yet balanced card.
Indeed. But then we've got that other card.
That other one. What are you referring
to? The big one right there in the center.
Oh, man.
Am I reading that one? Is that why you...
Corey Creative Farity is at it again.
Indeed.
That's what I call him, Corey Creative. That's our thing.
You guys have a thing? I didn't know you were that tight.
Dude, he's like my second cousin, you know?
Twice removed.
Yeah. Yeah, we hang out every holiday. So, this is a nice, very interesting agenda. You know, one that, I mean...
We probably ought to read before we get into
much. I just imagine that, you know, everybody's probably seen it by now, but I guess if you haven't...
Yeah, just in case, we ought to throw it out there.
Go ahead and tell us what it says, Will.
Okay, it's Dark Wings, Dark Words. It's an agenda with no traits or anything. And your minimum deck size is 75 cards. You cannot have more than one copy of each event card by title in your deck. You cannot trigger event card effects from your dead or discard pile. But as a response, after you play an event card, draw one card.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
This is a nice excuse to have one of those big decks that you just can't. You're like, I don't know what to cut. Like, you're rolling around right now with a 70-card deck. How hard would it be to add 5 cards to that, you know?
Well, that deck would take a whole lot of changes because it's running triplicates of, you know, Red Vengeance and a couple Words or Wind and things like that. And
Words or Wind?
Yeah, sorry,
Words are like arrows?
Yeah, I kind of trailed off because I was like, dang it, I keep doing that. Even though it is, you know, a card I'm playing fairly regularly, I keep screwing up the name. And ditching a bunch of that stuff would be a problem, going down to just one copy of each. I don't think that deck would like it.
All right.
But other decks would.
Yeah, I could definitely see myself running this agenda, kind of having some fun with it. I mean, I can't think of anything that's just like, would be like balls deep broken with it, but, you know, Lanny right now is really good, and so I could totally fit a couple of, you know, one distraction, one you killed the wrong dwarf, you know, one paper shield, why not, you know, and just one of all those really nice kind of utility answer kind of cards. It would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of stuff to choose from at this point. Even some of the, like, second-tier, so to speak, stuff that doesn't really see play now, like Distraction and, what is it?
When I Woke?
Now my brain shut down. No, the both players draw two cards.
Dragon's Tale.
Dragon's Tale, yeah. You know, some of that stuff, it suddenly now, if you want the redundancy, maybe you are running Much and More and Dragon's Tale and some of that stuff just to kind of round things out.
Yeah.
I like the idea. And, you know, Daryl, you've been playing some Netrunner as well lately. I'm kind of curious, do you agree with me? Does this just kind of feel like a Netrunner identity to you? Like it feels kind of like the Professor to me, you know?
I see what you're saying.
All that stuff, and it like really forces you to change how that deck plays, which I dig. And, of course, Netrunner is granular in your deck size. We've definitely seen, you know, several different identities that play around with that sort of thing in that game. So... I don't know. Just interesting. Makes me wonder if Corey's been playing some Netrunner lately and that had a hand in the inspiration.
I don't know. That'd be nice. Nice to know if he has been. I'm not sure, but definitely an interesting idea.
Yeah. Yep. Kyle, you got any thoughts on that one?
I like it. I think it opens up... I think that that's interesting, and it brings some value to events that otherwise necessarily, that wouldn't necessarily see play. I know, especially stuff like Lannister, I struggle when I'm putting an event package together to find, you know, there's just so many good events that you want in there, but you want to kind of be focused, and you know, you normally end up with triplicate or two ofs of only a couple. This allows you to run the whole suite of things. And some events that, you know, normally, like, much more is good, but now it's super good if it's, you know, card advantage neutral. I mean, you're playing a card to give your opponent a card, and you're getting two.
Yeah.
And some other stuff, some, like, events that were marginal, now you view them as, I mean, just look at the card and go, and tack on, and then draw a card.
Yeah, turning them into cantrips is pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very solid, solid play. The only, like, con here is, you know, the cannot trigger events from your dead or discard pile, so stuff like Endless Endurance and Forever Burning is not really an option.
That may be a good thing. I mean, if you could just
gain
one influence to draw cap, you know, during dominance each round with Forever Burning, I could see that being an issue.
No, totally. But the big con, one of the big cons I see outside of that is that once your opponents see an event, they know that it's not coming back. Now, that is not true with the any phase event Robert, so I think he's going to see some huge play with this, being able to get some of those things back.
Yeah. Well, but it's got to be a big psychological factor for the guy playing it, too. You know, you're sitting there with, like, a Nightmares in your hand, and kind of, you know, debating internally, is this the right moment to play it? Like, I only have one shot at this. You know, is this it? And then next turn, maybe you're kicking yourself, well, I blew my one Nightmares, and that was not when I needed it. Or something like that. I think it will reward the really tactical players there.
Yeah. But
it
is
will
this
not
the
be
de-
in-
No, go ahead.
No, it will not. I don't think this will be an easy agenda to play. It kind of reminds me of Hollow Hill in the sense that you really need to put a lot of thought. Like the Barra Hollow Hill decks that are out right now, they are super strong decks, but they are very thought intensive. Not just anyone can pick it up and play it. And it takes a lot of time and success. Kind of like when Ben ran Burn, it was a deck that came with time and effort. And I feel that this agenda is going to be one of those type of agendas that rewards familiarity and fine-tuning and dumping the hours into it to get the rewards out of it. So I like it. I'm excited. Anything that really changes deck building in a big way, I look forward to, and this certainly does it.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned, like, some of those Knights of the Hollow Hill decks and stuff, and of course, when you talk about those detailed ones, I also think of Bruno's House of Pain because, you know, there were a lot of moving pieces and, you know, timing on ambushing and, you know, standing with the long lances and this, that, and the other. But it's interesting how Knights of the Hollow Hill and now Dark Wings, Dark Words really encourage, like, event-heavy decks, you know, and really change the way you have to build your deck from the default. So, just interesting that seems to be a champ thing.
Well, look at their play styles, and I think their cards tend to embody how they view the game. A little bit. At least a little bit.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that, I think.
Because I think deep down you want to enjoy playing your card. So,
yeah.
Maybe extrapolate that out.
I'm not even sure that's very deep down. I would think that would be, you know, one of the top things.
Yeah.
Well, there's still three awesome, super exciting cards to go.
Yeah. One quick thing. Daryl, are you trying to talk?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm just kind of listening.
Well, just wondering, I keep hearing kind of a little thump, like a microphone's kind of popping, like turning on, like someone's going to talk, and then it goes quiet and nothing happens. So I thought maybe yours wasn't working, like you were trying to talk to us and it wasn't going through or something.
Nope, I'm rolling, man.
Okay. Well, One last parting thought on Dark Wings, Dark Words before we move on to the other exciting spoiler cards. I really kind of want to try it out with that new Stannis we got that gives people power whenever you play an event. Because I don't know. I just think that that'd be pretty fun, having multiple triggers off of whatever those events normally do.
I'll agree with that.
Certainly sounds fun.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got those other cards that Kyle started to mention. You want to lay one of those on us?
I will start with my favorite of the three, and that is what I think is going to be a huge boon for Lanny. We have Warden of the West at 2-cost, unique, Lannister. It's a title, prized 3, attaches to your house card with the response. After you play a prized card, kneel attached house card to choose and kneel a character. Discard all power on that character.
Booyah.
Shakalaka. Ooh.
Good gravy.
And first thought, you know what doesn't want to kneel their house card?
Knights of the Hollow Hill.
Knights of the Hollow Hill.
So it does not play well there.
Just yeah. For... I just want to say, a couple weeks back I said, you know, I wonder if there's cards that will be detrimental or at least not help that agenda, you know. And yep. Here's a prime example of one that does that.
It could also help Alliance, too.
Yeah, you know, it kind of does. If people are already wanting to kneel their house cards for titles, they don't necessarily want to kneel them to get 2 gold or draw a card.
Yep.
Yeah. But super good, slows down the rush, it's another kneel effect. Price 3 is scary, but being on a house card, unless you have direct targeted attachment removal, you should be okay.
Yeah, I think right now it's not super easy to get rid of a unique attachment. So.
Well, and we'll one see. On the house card, you know, like that's yeah. A double whammy. You can't just kill a house card and have that attachment drop off. I don't know if you'll see Targ having to kind of change up what attachment removal they play because of it.
I mean, they'll just play Mad King's Legacy, right?
You know, dude. I've seen people do it not that long ago.
Oh, man, those are the days. I remember playing that plot.
Or the new one that also hits Ravens.
Yep. Yeah. Of course, it is itself prized, but any house can run it, so that sure opens it up.
Or you could run, oh my gosh, the one where you kneel a maester, Ill Tidings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ill Tidings.
Maesters is coming back, baby. Maybe not.
They might be. Who knows?
Well, Warden of the West seems interesting, but how about Warden of the North?
Lay it on us, Daryl.
All right. 1-cost, unique. It's a title. This one's prized 2. Obviously, you attach to your house card in response. After you play a prized card, kneel attached house card to choose a character. That character gains stealth and does not kneel to defend until the end of the round. Until the end of the round.
Yep, gets those epic battles.
Pretty interesting. Not kneeling to defend is actually really nice.
Yeah.
I know, I've been playing with some of that lately. So.
Yeah, you were playing those Rangers of Winter against me, which I hadn't seen in years. And they were actually kind of annoying.
Hell yeah, they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also just triggers off of other prized cards, and it's not very proactive. Like, you've got to have prized cards. You know, of course, it triggers off of itself, but you ideally want to have more. And you've got to have the characters yourself on the board. And, you know, then once you trigger it, then you're just reacting to what your opponent's doing by defending. I don't like it as much as Warden of the West, where you're being much more proactive there and going after what they have. And if they don't have characters to kneel, well, that's probably already pretty good for you.
Well, it's also one less prized and one less gold.
Right.
So much more economically friendly attachment.
I mean, Lannister, though, I mean, they're not really going to have an issue with that. You know, pretty much all their builds. Is it as good as Warden of the West? Yeah, probably not. You know, discarding all power off of a character is really good. You know, there's no secret that this is obviously they're trying to make a real incentive for people to play these prize cards, not only because they're already bonkers, but just something to kind of enforce that, which is nice. But Warden of the West, yeah, it's definitely better than Warden of the North, at least from a glance. Not kneeling to defend is nice, though.
I mean, there's a lot of things, if you're doing House of Dreams for Riverrun or Winterfell. I saw a Stark, essentially, I think they're calling it Turtle, Stark Turtle, huge defense deck, do really well when I went up to Chicago. And I'm sure thoughts along those lines are going to be drilling over this card.
And I mean, and stealth is always nice.
Yeah. I mean, that part, actually, I had kind of overlooked a little bit because I was thinking about it in that defensive context. But giving stealth to be able to push through some offensive challenges is something I view much more favorably.
Or being able to block all three and then come back. I mean, now you can turn one guy, especially if he's a Tricon, into a one-man wrecking ball.
Beric Dondarrion!
Or Beric. It was always Beric.
Yeah. Granted, Warden of the West hurts Beric pretty bad, so one helps, one hurts. It's kind of a wash there, maybe.
Hey, man, sounds like balance. I'm always in favor of balance.
Yeah. Well, we've got one more. Let's see maybe how it stacks up. See if you guys think it's balanced. We've got Warden of the South. Now, this one is Baratheon, which probably throws a few people. But remember, technically, the Tyrells are the Wardens of the South, which annoys the Dornish to no end, I'm sure. And so this one is 0 gold. It's prized 2. And, of course, attached to your house card. And then response, after you play a prized card, kneel attached house card to choose an opponent. That opponent must choose and reveal a new plot card. Seems pretty cool, I think. Forcing them out of a plot could really help you with a lot of situations, or hurt them when they want to do something. Force them out of, say, Melisandre's scheme or First Snow of Winter, things like that. Though it could be a bit of a detriment on the flip side if your opponent is running city plots.
Yeah, I don't think it's... I mean, I think at 0 gold, there are games where this could be super handy. And if you're doing something like maybe with Noble Cause, it can save the game for you. Especially... But I'll be interested to see how many more plots come out that have non-plot phase effects where this is going to help you, kind of like the Aftermath. Like, the Aftermath is a great plot to force them out of.
Right.
Especially if you're in Baron, you're maybe doing the Rush route or with Noble Cause or whatnot. And like it says in the article, Fear of Winter, Threat, First Snow. There are a lot of good plots to swap it out of. There might be a lot of games where this sits almost dead on your house card. So I think at 0 gold, it's balanced. Price 2 might be a little tough. I definitely think it's weaker than the other two, but it's a boom or bust card, and if that becomes a theme in Bera, is like a go big or go home, I'm all for it. Kind of like Riches of the Reach.
That is kind of a tough thing. Like, it's going to be great in the matchups where you happen to need it, and going to be pretty insignificant in others, and then in some it's going to really hurt you when you go ahead and force them into a Valor when it turns out it's more advantageous for them to, you know, reveal Valor mid-turn rather than you know, during the plot phase or something like that.
I think right now, you know, there's already effects, obviously, that make players choose a new plot. You know, there's a Marjorie that does it right now, and no one's really playing that. But this is a little different. I think out of any effect that makes someone choose a new plot, this, I think, would be the most playable. I know people have been playing Bungled Orders, but that's more, you know, for their plot deck, not really their opponents. So this one could help you. It could help you also get out of, like, Fear of Winter, possibly. So I think this one, out of all of them, is going to depend on the metagame the most. You know, depending how the meta evolves with this next set, I think is going to be dependent on how much play this actually sees, how many plot decks we're going to see that are filled with these sinister plots that have a passive effect that's really going to bother you, or maybe you just want to use it as something simple as getting rid of a two-claim plot and maybe forcing them to switch to something less aggressive. I don't know. I like it. I really do. I could see myself running a singleton of it just for fun. So, you know, I like it.
And I think Bear is one of the few houses that doesn't really care what the prize on a card is. I don't think giving your opponent two power is ever scared a Bear player. Probably view it almost as an offensive. I think Bear is, if any house does, Bear is going to view the prized keyword as a keyword that can be used offensively as well as a drawback. So I don't think the price two on it really shakes them. So yeah, I think at least one or two of us will see a lot of decks.
Okay, fair enough.
Yep.
Well, pretty fascinating little peek into the fourth pack. I wish that was not quite so far down the freaking road at the moment. I'm getting antsy for these new cards.
Yeah, me too. Pretty excited. What is it, March 18th, I want to say? Is that the release?
I think it's March. I'm not sure I'd heard the exact date, so 18th may be correct.
Okay. I feel like I've seen that somewhere. But either way, it can't come soon enough. I'm super excited, so. And judging from the number, okay, looks like Dark Wings, Dark Words isn't going to be out until, what, like the fourth pack or something like that?
Yeah, this is the fourth pack. It says so.
Oh, does it say? Okay. Yeah. I wasn't paying attention to that. Well, cool.
All very exciting. I'm really digging this next cycle.
Okay, so I think right now we want to go ahead and debut a new segment on the podcast that we would like to start making kind of a regular thing. We would like to spend a little time each podcast talking about what we've been playing lately. And I don't mean that in the props and slops sense, like, you know, Arkham Asylum and Battlestar Galactica and the like. No, I'd like us to be talking about what we've been playing in Thrones, what kind of decks we're fiddling with, interesting plays that we had happen, stuff like that. Unfortunately, we don't have a name for this segment yet. That's where we would like our listeners to come in. We want to let this run for a week or so, take some suggestions on what to call this segment. So I guess that means it'll run basically from when this episode comes out through the next Friday after, once that one comes out, to make it easy. Maybe run it through Sunday, since we won't be recording until the next week after that. But basically, there will be another week where we do not have this segment named yet. But if you've got a nice name, we're hoping for some kind of nice little Nedley connection to the books. Shoot a message to us. Drop us a line over on twochampsonechump@gmail.com, or mention it on Facebook, or even just respond in the thread on CardGameDB.
Or you can text me, bitch.
Or you can personally text Daryl at 417-555.
That's right.
Yeah, he got worried when I used the actual area code,
like,
didn't he?
I was like, oh my god, that's all I need is like getting Glazer to like call me up in the middle of the night. Why aren't you drinking, Daryl? I don't think you'd do that.
I totally think you would. You don't give him enough credit.
Probably not.
So, I think we all did have the chance to play this last weekend, right? So, who wants to jump up first with some thoughts or anecdotes there?
How anecdotal of you.
Indeed.
I guess that means
wow.
First.
Yeah, I think you should go ahead, Daryl.
All right. Well, my deck that I've been playing here recently has been a Stark no agenda deck. Right now, basically, I'm playing one of the every good Kingsguard guy, and my restricted card is Mira, which is really awesome because we have not been playing Mira over here ever since she got restricted, really. You know, we felt that slot on a character with only two strengths.
We hadn't?
Would be,
I think maybe you hadn't.
Was it just me? I don't know. Like, I had not seen anybody else play Mira.
I do not think anywhere near as highly of Missouri if they stop playing Mira because she got restricted.
Yeah. I just don't normally play Stark. But my vote was still totally for Mira for their restricted slot.
I mean, I guess after No Quarter came off, sure. But
well, yeah, then
if I had to pick,
it's easy.
Well, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, anyways, so I've been running Mira, obviously No Quarter, and a little Winter Tech, and even two copies of The Kindly Man, which I've never gotten off in any of my games, which is very sad. But really, it's a kind of a crazy deck.
Man, then you know,
I mean, probably
there,
it doesn't really matter
as a late game. You know, maybe I'll get him, but
right,
I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, so but it's a winner deck, and I'm running a winner. And is there anything else kind of outside the box there that I was? I don't think there were any like crazy locations. I know that I've just filled it with gold. Like it's just pumping out the gold, so I'm counting like 7 to 9 gold, you know, mid game. It's really nice to bring out like all these shadows cards. I'm running Spending the Winter Stores, and this is the awesome part of this deck that I really liked.
None of us were running attachments to go get with your Spending the Winter Stores.
Well, that was very awesome. So thanks to him for that old habit of building a deck with no attachments in it. But I'm obviously running, Frozen Solid. But then I'm running Freezing Rain, which is super cool because you can get off a little bit of a choke theme there because it can go on limited locations, which is really nice. So if you can get on the ball there and choke your opponent a little bit early, it can work out. And then I'm also running a single copy of Maester... Oh, God. Maester Malin's Tome?
Yeah, you should just drop that. You should drop it.
I probably should, because really, it's not even that useful. Like, I even got it off once and, like, got rid of Joe's Valor. Like, it was so underwhelming. But maybe that was due to the deck that he just ran. You know, he had, like, Westeros Bleed, so it really didn't really matter. But still fun. So kind of situationally, I can grab things. And then I think the most interesting thing about the deck is the plot choice. So in this deck, and I'm running like Nightmare, so I'm running a lot of blanking effects too, but I've got like the targeted kill with No Quarter. And then I've got March to the Wall, River Blockade, or it's just called Blockade, I think. Blockade. Yes. Obviously City of Lies. Because of that Shadows tech in there. Oh my gosh, I can't remember all my other plots. But they're all really nice. I think, do I run First Snow in there too? No, I don't. But so all the plots are just really interesting, kind of plots that have caught a lot of people off guard. And, you know, just kind of the blanking effects and the jumping in effects and Shadows Aria. Like, come on. Like, we all forgot how awesome that card was. So that's what I've been running right now, and it has been a blast. So What?
I was about to say, you missed the blast from the past card that I would have mentioned from your deck, which was the Ranger of Winter, which was surprisingly effective.
I thought I did.
Maybe you just mentioned it in brief passing as you looked at the cards, and I missed that. It's possible, but surprisingly effective. That shut down one of my turns. I think maybe that was the turn after Valor or something, and I just couldn't get around him.
Yeah, really cool deck. Really, like, that's really awesome. And it runs Winter tech, but like, it doesn't need to be Winter. Like, if you are in a matchup, because it runs one White Raven, like, you know, if you're in a matchup where you know you can't win that back and forth battle, you know, I didn't really commit to that idea.
Yeah.
You know, the idea is, you know, drawing cards with Jamie, blanking things with like Nightmares and Mira and bouncing things out and, you know, putting things back into Shadows and whatnot. So it is super fun.
And it had a good run last Saturday.
It really did. Very cool. Went against two Martell control decks. Well, I guess yours is control. I mean, you got that.
Yeah, I mean, I can last talk minute about rush it more. In
but
a
yeah.
Minute. Yeah,
but anyways, so that's what I'm running. I might post the list if you guys are actually interested in that. I know it sounds like a piece of garbage, but it's super fun, and that was the point. That was the idea. You know, we get stuck always trying to build competitive and efficient decks, and sometimes you lose sight of what you're doing. And you forget that, hey, I play this game really to just have fun. You know, winning is fun, but also coming up with these kind of, you know, kooky ideas that are also fun and building that deck is a blast. So that's what I'm running.
Cool. Kyle, what's yours been like?
This week we drafted houses in our meta, and I picked Greyjoy because it's one I don't normally go to.
Interesting. So do you draft those houses then to just kind of like force people to play outside their comfort zone, or how'd that come up?
That's actually exactly kind of how it goes. Everyone's always say we're drafting houses and use draft in reverse order of how you finish. So whoever did worst that week picks first. So
whoever did worst, like the previous week, you mean?
That week. So like we're playing like last. I guess it's been 2 weeks ago we're playing, and whoever did worse says, all right, next week I want to play Lannister.
Okay,
Lannister's off the table.
So it's based on your placement from the prior week. I got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I got Greyjoy, and I was thinking Choke the whole time, and I was like, this will be good to get ready for, you know, store tournaments, because Choke's always usually pretty good. And I was sitting there Thursday afternoon, I was like, you know what, that's just not fun. So I went on Aga Cards, and I looked for whatever deck looked the most interesting / fun to play, and that was this Greyjoy Maester Mill deck. I don't remember who it was, give credit to him, but I pulled it up, built it, did one test game beforehand, had a lot of fun. I milled, I think my record was 34 cards in a turn.
Good lord.
Which was awesome. Super cool. because I was running the, I think it's a brass link. Is that the mill link? Is brass?
Yep.
Yeah.
Ran one on the agenda, then two in the deck, and I got two of them on like a. I ran all the chains that he could on the agenda. The thought being, deck them Valor, and then just unoppose your way through all the chains.
Gotcha.
Total sellout to the gimmick, and I had like eight chains on an Amon, and I had two brass links, and he had a Kraken tattoo and a supportive Salt Cliff on him, and it just got stupid. So, yeah, I, like, milled out half his deck in a single turn. He's like, I'm doing pretty good. And then, bam, mill for eight, bam, mill for eight, mill for eight. Like, it was just, it was sick. So, super cool. It was fun. I don't know if I would take it anywhere, but it opened my eyes, you know, to playing Maesters again. So I'm going to try and look at it. Maybe work on that in some different houses to see if there's anything still there.
Gotcha.
But I would talk more about the finer points of the deck. I don't think this is a deck with finer points. It was mill the crap out of them as much as you can. If you can mill it, you did it. And that was the whole plan. Which was fun. Really fun.
Cool.
Awesome.
How about you, Mel? What you been playing?
You know, this last weekend I was playing around with some Martell Bloodthirst, and I was doing this build based off of trying to play a boatload of the Martell characters that kill or discard themselves for, you know, various effects. Chose the Orphan of the Green Blood as my restricted card, you know, playing Parting Blows and that sort of thing, and then the Shores of the Summer Sea to cycle some of that back into the deck. And, you know, it's fun. I kind of like being able, on a lot of turns, to just kind of be able to control my character count at will. Of course, Preston's in the deck, too. It's nice to be able to send him back into Shadows. And then, you know, some pretty standard Martell control stuff. Aside from that, you know, Prince's Wrath and the Red Vengeance and the Words Are Like Arrows. There we go. I'm finally going to say the right name this time around. And, you know, some of that stuff. And it played pretty well the week before. And then this week played a bit more awkwardly, where I was doing fairly well against Daryl early, but was having trouble removing my own characters from the board. So we went to what, like eight or nine plots, wasn't it, Daryl?
Yeah, we went a ton,
and,
man.
And you probably drew from my agenda half of those turns? Maybe?
I definitely
maybe
got
three
it.
At least.
I think it was around three, but yeah. It was awesome when I did.
Yeah, but still, I mean, like, that's terrible. Like, I'm sitting there trying desperately to keep control of this game, but I can't get what I need to get my stuff off the board. I forget now what all was I had. The Viper, I'm sure, and I think maybe you had too many intrigue icons, so I couldn't win intrigue with my Dornish Paramours to discard them. Maybe that's what it was.
I was definitely winning those. Yeah. Ranger a winner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That actually, I think you're right. That was when it was really causing me issues there.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It was interesting, but not super great. And then I also played against some Baratheon Knights of the Hollow Hill stuff, which was able to keep its character count even below mine. I think it was only one turn that he kept it below mine, but we were even for most of the game, which didn't help me much. And we're talking even at, like, one and two characters. but, you know, he just had all the black cells and stuff to help lock me down after that. So I think it was a fun experiment, but I think even with those discarding characters, I think the character base is high enough that I can't count on my agenda the way I would like to, because I mean it's still playing somewhere in the range of 30 characters because there's so many of those self discard ones. So you know I'm not real happy with how that was going. I think I may scrap that particular Bloodthirst plan and try something more character light afterward.
Yeah, that's what I'd do. I guess that's all of us, huh?
Yeah.
We've all talked about what we're playing.
It's all three.
So I think possibly, I think I'll post mine in the link for the show just so you guys can get an idea and laugh at me. you know, we just thought we would let you guys know what we're playing just so you can get an idea what's going on in our heads. And if you have a kooky idea, go ahead and pitch it by us and maybe we'll build it and play it that week.
I'm willing to throw decks together and play around with them.
Yeah. Game of Thrones is fun. It's a game. So we need to, you know, we're just trying to focus more on the fun part. At least I am.
Daryl will
like this. You should have seen the look on Will's face whenever he pulled Maester Maelyn's tome in a tome. In an intrigue challenge, and he looks at it, and you could see him, he, like, did a double take. He's like, Daryl, you need to cut this card. Just, like, not even joking, not even, like, a laugh, just, like,
cut this shit.
What are you doing?
I was like, I think it's cool. And yeah, it was a blast. And then don't forget about Corset Rob. What?
I was actually kind of excited to see him again. Yeah. We don't really have anyone playing Targ at the moment, so it's not a bad call. Yeah. Or not as bad a call, anyway.
Oh, man. But yeah.
Sounds like you boys had some fun.
Yep.
I did have some fun. I really did. It was a blast. Props and or slops. Will, do you have a prop for today?
You know, I'm going to be a little egotistical and prop myself for starting, or not restarting, but continuing, I guess I should say, Arkham Origins. I never get around to finishing it before, so I'm back to playing and trying to make myself finish it.
Nice.
We'll see if it happens.
Yeah, I still need to play that game, so I've...
Oh, did you not even start it?
Nope. I beat Arkham Asylum, which I thought was very fun, aside from the final boss battle. Like, that was not very good. But then I started Arkham City, and I don't know why. I just quit playing it. I just wasn't as interested. But I will, because I heard Origins is really awesome.
It's been pretty good. You know, I mean, it's not a perfect game. And at least one part of the combat really frustrates me that it was changed, because I've been trained, like, over the course of the first two Arkham games, like, okay, you know, if a thug with a knife is attacking you, what do you do?
Hit him with the cape, man.
Yeah,
hit him with the cape.
You hit B and hit him with the cape, right? In Origins, they changed that, so now you have to hold back, like, away from whatever direction they're coming from, and hit Y repeatedly, like, each time they swipe at you to dodge each one. And so I keep trying to, like, hit B to cape stun them, and it doesn't work.
Now that is bummer and shit.
Yeah.
That's interesting how they changed that. I don't know. Is it like a smooth animation, like, looking thing? Like, does it look cooler?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say it looks cooler, but, I mean, it's smooth enough, I suppose. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Nice. Well, I've got a prop, I guess. I don't even remember if I wasn't done with the book on the last episode. So I did finish Mistborn. So I'm continuing with my New Year's resolution challenge to myself to read books and stop being a heathen or whatever.
That may never happen.
I will definitely always be a heathen. But I'm trying to be an educated one by reading fantasy and sci-fi books. Anyways, so right now I'm reading Full Moon, the second book in the Dresden Files. And I'll tell you what, this challenge might get derailed a little bit, because I might start just reading the Dresden books.
Hey, I mean, at least you'd still be reading books.
That's true. I mean, I really wanted to mix in a bunch of things, man, but I forgot how awesome Harry Dresden is. Like, how fun of a character that is. You know, he's pretty relatable. Like, he's an average guy, but he's not your average guy. Like he's so just like, you know, I'm not a superhero, you know, like, holy shit, you know, these things scare me. Like, you know, I mean, it's just that kind of, I don't know. He's really cool though. I'm really enjoying the book. And that's pretty much where I'm at right now. It's getting really good. And there's like 10 or 11 other books to read, so. I hear after
there's
book
a
three,
bunch.
Shit gets real. So, we'll see. You got any other props and or slops?
You know, I've got a video game related slop. I thought I had read that episode 2 of The Wolf Among Us was going to be out today when we're recording, which is Tuesday, February 3rd. Or sorry, 4th. I'm saying the wrong date. But I got on and checked it before we were podcasting, because hey, I was willing to bail yet again on Arkham Origins to play The Wolf Among Us, because number one is awesome, and number two, I could have finished the whole thing tonight, but it was definitely not showing up on Xbox Live. So now I'm pretty bummed.
Bummer, bro. I have not tried that game yet, so I haven't even played The Walking Dead. I played, like, a little bit of the first
really?
Game.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll probably get there eventually. I mean, I still need to beat Mass Effect 3, so.
Did you never do that? Holy crap,
no.
Dude.
No. The first and second one were amazing, and I bought the third one, day one, like, bought, like, the sweet collector's edition, like, got super stoked, and then I couldn't get around to playing it, really. Like, I played it a little bit the first day and whatnot, and maybe the second day, but then I kind of quit playing. Like, I was super busy with something, so I just couldn't do it. And then, you know, it started to get out that the game was not as the, you know, as BioWare had presented it, where every decision had a serious impact on your game. And you
I
know,
mean,
it was
every decision you make in real life doesn't have a serious impact.
I realize what you're saying, but they were saying that, like, every decision you made in the previous games would come up and shape the outcome of the third game, you know, like an important way type of thing, you know, and then it wasn't that case. So I got really kind of down about that. And I was just like, well, that really sucks. You know, I was just expecting something else. And I'm sure the gaming community probably maybe exaggerated a little bit as far as exactly what BioWare is trying to sell there. But, you know, BioWare had done some really cool stuff with, like, Knights of the Old Republic, you know. And so I definitely had the faith in them that they could have done that. So I was just like, well, fuck that. But now I've sobered up. I've had some time to think about it. So I'll probably give it another go.
Yeah, you really ought to. I totally thought it was worth it. But I don't know. I was never offended or worried by any of the implications or choices or whatnot.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. Geez, I don't think I have really anything else, any prop and or slop.
Yeah, you know, it's been a slower week for me. Of course, I didn't get to start on that next section of. Episode, I guess I should be saying, of The Wolf Among Us. You know, I didn't have more Sherlock to watch this week.
Oh man, that third episode. There's my prop.
Oh,
that was
really
nice.
Yeah. Wow. Did you? Man, how much did you hate that? I spoiled that little "Did you miss me?" bit for
oh,
you.
Oh my god. Yeah. By the way, we'll stop right here really fast. Spoilers. Right here for Sherlock. So if you haven't watched it and you plan on it, well, I don't know how far into detail we're going to go on this.
Turn the podcast off now.
Just turn it off. Whatever we say after this probably doesn't matter anyways. It's fine. But let me tell you what. I wasn't super pissed about it. I mean, I am too good at predicting outcomes of things, like so with the last two books I've read. You know, my power of deduction's pretty good. So I wasn't super mad. But I think had you not told me, you know, I probably wouldn't have deducted that would have happened.
Right.
So, but I wasn't mad. Like, it's my own fault for just jumping on it and being like, I know what it is. You know, it's going to show up at the end. You know what I mean? But, it was still awesome. Like, it didn't really take away.
Yeah.
Like, when that showed up in his brain and, like, how you know, how he took that and, like, you know, everyone talking to him, like, okay, which way are you going to fall? And, you know, you have to stay out of shock.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That
was
super
awesome.
Super cool. So,
and that villain was sweet.
No.
He was the creepiest villain that any of the Sherlocks have had so far.
Yeah, and they've had some good ones. And that, man, the writing is so good. Like, right, you know, some of these shitty-ass television networks with these garbage shows that just have a bunch of, like, big-titted chicks or, like, super
that beefy sounds right dudes up your alley. Or something. I know, right? I love it. I eat it up. No, but seriously, who don't have a very good group of writers, it's like, you need to learn how it's done. Like, the writers for Sherlock are just geniuses. And the show is presented in such a way that I think even if they had a totally different cast and Benedict Cumberbatch or Martin Freeman weren't in it, I think it would still be good. Granted, their talent is, they're very talented and whatnot, but the writing is, I mean, that's what a show is. A show is what the writers make. You can't have a good show without good writing, and the writing is just, I couldn't say enough how just fantastic it is.
Totally top-notch.
Yeah. So, that may have been the longest prop I've ever had. I mean, it was a big deal, man.
It's, like, it's worth it.
I was watching it, and it was one of those things where, like, I turned it off, you know, and I just kind of sat there and reflected on what I watched. Like, and because, like, I've heard, and obviously it could be rumor and whatnot, that they weren't going to do a fourth season because Benedict Cumberbatch is so popular. And Martin Freeman, obviously, they're doing this, you know, the Hobbit movies and, you know.
I'm pretty sure they've said there's a season four coming.
Okay. Well, that's good because I was like, I don't, you know, it's sort of like whenever you watch the ending of Twin Peaks, you're just like, are you serious? How could they have canceled this and it end like that? You know, it was crazy. So, man. That show is really good. And I know we were talking about Moriarty, you know, and I don't know. I think you weren't much of a fan, but, man, I really like Moriarty. I like the way they portray him as a little flamboyant weirdo.
Yeah, I did not really dig this particular Moriarty, but, oh, well. The show itself is good enough. It certainly still made it bearable to watch.
And I love the way he says Sherlock. Sherlock?
Oh, yeah.
Anyways. All right, so this episode just went from like an hour to an hour and a half because we're talking about Sherlock forever. I mean, I don't mind
cutting
it. There is
zero wrong with us talking about Sherlock for that long. Zero. Yeah. You know, thinking of shows, though, I am going to throw out one last prop to a TV show that I've been watching. I watched the first season of King of the Nerds last year, and now the second season has had a couple episodes, and I've got to say it's hilarious and awesome, and I've gotten a huge kick out of watching that show. So
now,
if you play Thrones, I think you'll enjoy this show.
Didn't you send in an audition tape for that show?
You know, I was going to, and the problem is I'm a lazy sumbitch.
Oh,
and
man.
I never did actually film the tape and send it in.
You bastard.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time, you know, marking down and, like, outlining, okay, this is why I should be on the show. Like, these are all the nerdy things I do and have and, you know, collect this, do X podcast, write Article Z, you know, and this, that, and the other, had that all planned out and never actually filmed a video, which is a bummer because, you know, I think there would have been a good chance of getting on there. Maybe they'll do a season three.
Maybe. And you can be on it.
Indeed.
Also, don't forget this year's Moon Boy Classic at Metagames Unlimited in Springfield, Missouri. It kind of, traditionally, we've had a late winter, early spring tournament to kind of help kick off the pre-regional tournament season. This year, FFG appears to have kind of embraced that idea as well with the store championships. So this year's Moon Boy Classic, the third annual, will be the Metagames Unlimited Store Championship, but make sure you come down and see us on March 1st with the Two Champs and a Chump crew all in attendance. Players, I'm sure, from Oklahoma, Arkansas, Iowa. I think I heard some confirmed Illinois coming down now as well. And I've heard rumors of some other folks, so it should be a great time.
All right. Well, I don't have anything else.
Yep. I'm all good.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to our show. If you've stuck around for this long to listen to us banter on about the things that we enjoy. If you want to email us, you can do so at twochampsonechump@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter, twochampsonechump, Twitter, whatever, /hashtag, whatever. Or you can do our Facebook page. If you have not liked us on Facebook, please do so. Tell your grandmother to like us, all that stuff. We would appreciate that. Feel free at any time to message us or put on our timeline or email us. If you have any ideas or any thoughts on the show, we like to hear from you. Danger Zone! The ghost who never goes away.